Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome back, Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler. He's Lance Zierlein. Lance, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was good. I was able to catch up with the family. My family, we went to my mom and dad's house and spent Thanksgiving there. I brought some tape and I forced my dad to watch Penny Sewell with me. So it was fun. We'll do that on another episode. We can really get into, you know, what I saw, what he saw, and how maybe looking at offensive linemen is a little different for a line coach and what they look for, which, you know, every time I watch tape with them, I learn a lot. Every time I talk to a coach at a position, I learn a lot. It's always great, I think, to get an evaluator's perspective and then a coach's perspective, because a lot of coaches are not very good evaluators, but knowing what to look for is invaluable, and knowing what they want to look for and knowing how, you know, this or that, you know, some certain feature with the offensive linemen, for example, some things have really changed about how they coach the position because of the amount of speed that's in the league. So it's an interesting perspective. And when a time is right, we'll really get into that breakdown of Penei Sewell. And I think our listeners will really enjoy kind of some of his insight.
No, I can't wait for that. We talked a little bit offline about it, and there's so much to get into with that. And so looking forward to that. Like you said, we'll be doing that on another podcast here coming up. Today, wanted to reflect on first mock draft of the year. You know, we're going to go through it, talk about some of these quarterbacks, the order they come off the board, how early, how many, any surprise names that were included in this mock draft, you know, which teams were the toughest to figure out. Now that we're in December, you know, we're getting to that point where the order, the draft order is really starting to shape up. We're getting a better sense for the teams that will be picking top five, top 10. And then, you know, also conversely with these players, you know, more guys are opting out and declaring each day. And, you know, we're getting a better feel for all the players that'll be in this pool. So let's just jump into it. So, Lance, you saw the mock. You know, you analyzed it. After Lawrence at one, I think there's no surprise there. Trevor Lawrence currently slotted to the New York Jets, which I was surprised doing my research. It would be the first time the Jets took a quarterback number one overall since Joe Namath back in the mid-60s. So that was interesting. But after that, that's where it starts to get interesting. The Jaguars almost eked out a win against the Browns, but they hung on to that loss. They've lost, what, 9, 10 in a row now? So they've got a stranglehold on that number two pick. And a little bit of a surprise, I went with Zach Wilson there at number two over Justin Fields or over Trey Lance. What do you think about that BYU signal caller being the second, not only the second quarterback drafted, just the second pick overall in this scenario?
So before I get into that, I want to reference the fact that Jacksonville has fired Dave Caldwell as general manager. So there will be a new general manager who will be making this selection, and I think it's fairly obvious the pick is going to be a quarterback. What you've done here with Zach Wilson is taken a name and a player who I know you have been on him and a lot of his throws, and you, I think, are going to be on to the guy that is going to have some buzz with the scouting community in NFL circles, and that's Zach Wilson. From a size standpoint, he's not the biggest quarterback out there. He's got kind of Derek Carr type size, but what you have is a very lively arm, a guy who can throw on the move, who can play today's brand of football in terms of extending plays and making throws from the pocket or plays outside of the pocket. And I love that you did this, because this is something, you know, for me, what a mock draft is, Dane, is it's an exercise in contingencies. People get so upset with our mock drafts, and because it doesn't align with what the general public thinks is the situation at that particular time when they're reading it. So when I throw my first mock out there in January, there's a lot of people who are upset about things that I have because I've watched these guys and I know where the general consensus is wrong or where there's been groupthink on a player. And so what you've done is you've been able to shortcut that in early December and take a guy who is going to be heavily talked about in Zach Wilson and put him with a good fit in Jacksonville, a team that frankly I don't think they feel like they have to have the Blake Bortles type physically anymore. And Zach Wilson, you know, they had he's bigger than Gardner Minshew, and I really love him here. That you've done this early in the process, because once you do that in mock drafts, a lot of people don't realize it creates a new domino effect for you. And I don't know if you're like this, Dane, but your process, can you talk about your process? Do you have preconceived notions of what you're going to do at different teams, or do you let your own board flip what you end up doing at different teams?
You know, it's mixed because obviously we're so early in the process that once it gets later in the first round in a mock draft, you know, it gets to the point where I just want to introduce some new names. And that was the case in this mock, which we'll get to in a little bit. But, you know, talking about at the top, you know, me putting Wilson at number two isn't to get clicks or get headlines. You know, that wasn't the purpose. No. But 100% I agree with you. The whole point of a mock draft is to lay out scenarios. And that's, I'm not sitting here and saying Zach Wilson will be the number two quarterback drafted. I'm not going to say that Jacksonville absolutely believes that Wilson is better than, say, Justin Field. That's not what I'm saying by this. What I'm saying is that it's the same thing I've written about when I talked about Zach Wilson in my article on him. I firmly believe, just talking with people around the league, there will be no consensus on quarterbacks 2 through 4 in this draft. There will be teams that prefer Zach Wilson. I think some guys will prefer Justin Fields. Some will probably even prefer North Dakota State's Trey Lance. I do think that there will be split opinions around the league. And so not saying that Zach Wilson absolutely will be that second quarterback drafted, but I am saying there will be no consensus and people need to keep an open mind to the possibility someone other than Justin Fields going at number two.
Yeah, and that's how it works. I mean, that's how people get it in their mind that it's going to be one way.
Right,
and,
right.
And then until that's kind of chipped away at by enough people, they start to let their guards down and start to be open to other assumptions. Now, I'm not here to tell you that Fields won't be the second pick and Wilson will be, but what I am going to tell you is that Zach Wilson up to this point has generated some buzz, and I think you have to start to talk about him in the mix of where you want to put him in the quarterback battle. So there's no question about that. I think your number three pick with the Bengals and Penei Sewell is one that makes a lot of sense from a need standpoint, especially in light of Joe Burrow being injured. Penei Sewell, to me, could play either tackle spot or guard. I just think he's got the type of physical tools to pretty much play anywhere on the offensive line. And so I don't think that's much of a reach there. I'm not sure my grade is going to be, after I watched him and graded him, I'm not sure my grade is going to be as high as some other people, but I recognize the enormous amount of talent, despite the fact that we've only had 1 year to watch him play. So he's still some of the holes in his game are still a little bit of a mystery because we just don't know what that's going to look like, you know, 2 and 3 years removed from being just 19 years old. And that's all the tape we have on Sewell. And we know that he is one of the great athletes that we've seen at that position. And I think my comp is going to be Trent Williams, because he's got some of that same get on your tail very quickly like Trent Williams had coming out.
I agree with that. And I don't want to get too far down this Sewell road, but I'm going to put you on the spot here. Where would he rank among the big four tackles last year for you? Because I was trying to think about this when I was putting this together. I love Jedrick Wills. He was my top guy last year. Tristan Wirfs was right behind him for me. And then I had Becton pretty close as number three. And I'm thinking about, okay, well, where would Sewell fit in that for me? I think he'd be kind of maybe right behind Becton or right very close to Becton and just on my grading scale. So, I mean, even though he is the top tackle, he might be the first non-quarterback drafted this year. in last year's class, just in my own personal grades, he would have been the third or fourth offensive tackle at his own position. So it's really interesting. How do you look at that?
To me, the clear-cut winner was Jedrick Wills. Second, mm-hmm. I put Becton. And then I had Andrew Thomas, and I gave them a high 6.4s, which are first-round grades on Andrew Thomas and Tristan Wirfs. I had them neck and neck. And you know, to me, I feel like Tristan Wirfs, based on the tape, is below Penei Sewell, based on your strengths, your weaknesses, and what you project from those strengths and weaknesses, I had him just below Tristan Wirfs. So at like a 6.47. Now, I could say 6.5. And in my grading scale, a 6.5 is kind of a boom-bust prospect who has flashes of being an elite player. But the bust stuff comes from a little bit of lack of edge strength and you know, basically just having 1 year of he came into school out of high school. He was 40 pounds heavier. So, you know, you could talk about that. You could talk about what's his maturity level coming out. You know, some things about football makeup for a young player that is going to be a concern for any young player coming out. So that creates a little bit more bust because he only had 1 year at school. You only have 1 year of tape. And so I could end up with a 6.5 on him, which is really more of a volatile grade. But I think when it's all said and done, I'm going to hang a 6.47 to 6.49 somewhere in there. And of course, during the combine and pro day workouts, and after talking to some personnel people, that could certainly change higher or even a little lower. But I don't think he's leaving a 6.4 range. I mean, if anything, he could go up into the 6.7 range. I don't have a 6.6. But what I'm telling you is that I think he's right. I would not have put him ahead of Becton, and I would not put him ahead of Jedrick Wills, but I do think he's right there with Andrew Thomas coming out. And Andrew's a guy who just got guys blocked. Penei Sewell's a guy who can do – he has that rare walk-the-earth talent where only a few men who walk the earth have the size and athletic ability that he has. But then Wirfs, to me, was a little mechanical, but there wasn't a lot of holes in his game as long as he got coached up, because physically there just aren't many holes in Tristan Wirfs' game. Like, you just can't find – he has the ability to do just about everything. So I'm with you, Dane. He's right there. And to me, he would have been somewhere 3, 4, 5 with the big four last year, and that's saying something, because that was a special class.
Yeah, it really was. I think it leads us to this next discussion on this mock, which is just the fact that we know that it's a very quarterback-heavy group this year. You know, we could have four quarterbacks going to top 10, top 12 picks. But in terms of the non-quarterbacks, we don't have those quote-unquote elite guys this year, at least in my opinion. And I'll be eager to see how you see it. But when I'm laying out this mock, okay, you got Lawrence 1, Wilson 2, the Bengals, and I didn't do any trades, just, you know, it's too early to be projecting trades right now. Bengals at Sewell at number 3, and then the Cowboys and the Chargers, 4 and 5. That's where it gets interesting. Neither of those teams are taking a quarterback. Obviously, the Chargers aren't with Justin Herbert, and I love you, Cowboys fans, but those of you telling me they're taking a quarterback that Jerry won't pass, I promise you, he will pass. He loves Dak more than the potential of a Justin Fields. I can promise you that. So at number 4 and 5, that's where it gets interesting, because I think that Penei Sewell, I think Dallas would absolutely take Penei Sewell. I don't think Sewell will drop below Dallas. I feel pretty confident about that. But Sewell's off the board in this scenario. So where does Dallas go at number 4? You know, I think Ja'Marr Chase, to me, is also in that group with Sewell in terms of the best non-quarterbacks in this draft. The Cowboys aren't taking another wide receiver there. If they can't trade out of that spot at 4, what direction do they go then? It made it really tough. Micah Parsons is a good player, but I don't know if you're taking an off-ball linebacker at number 4 overall. Right. I don't know that any of these pass rushers really warrant top 5 consideration. Even though I don't know that these corners are, you know, legit top 5 guys, you know, you run out of options. So I went with Caleb Farley, Virginia Tech corner, to Dallas number 4. I don't know that he's, you know, worthy of being the number 4 player in this draft, or in any draft, generally speaking. But in this draft, it just might be how it works out.
I think Sertan is a guy that could also, and we'll get to him in a second.
Yep.
I could absolutely see cornerback at this spot if you feel like you have one graded highly enough. You know, you really just don't have enough tape on Gregory Rousseau to put him this high. And I know they've thrown a lot of players back in the mix, like Alden Smith, and they've had Randy Gregory forever, and they're hoping they need rush. They could really use Micah Parsons. Sean Lee, you got one linebacker who has tremendous talent in Vander Esch who gets hurt. Sean Lee is just the injury stuff. You know, Micah Parsons would fit them great. Once again, do you put him at four? What I think the Cowboys have to consider doing is finding a trade partner and moving back. And I know we're very early in the process to be talking about this, but when you look at their needs, there's going to be teams who want quarterback there. There are going to be teams who covet Ja'Marr Chase. And because of the quarterback thing, I think if you're Dallas, you're going to have a willing partner who is looking to move up and potentially take a quarterback. And so I think they may find an ability to move back and still address cornerback. I know later in the draft you've got Darian Kendrick from Clemson is a guy that's got a lot of talent as well. So I think you can find a cornerback in the draft. I would rather move back. Now I'm going to throw a name in here that you don't have until later in your mock, but a guy who I think extraordinarily highly of, and we talked about him before, and that's Slater out of Northwestern. To me, Slater is a dog. Now, he is tough. He's very strong. We've seen him play tackle. He has sub 33-inch arms, so he's not the physical. He doesn't have the physical traits of it. But then when you watch him play, he just doesn't get beat into his chest very often because he's kind of smart with his hands. So, and I think there's no question he could play guard. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, you could do a lot worse at upgrading your offensive line, especially that left or right guard position, with Rashawn Slater. So he's working out in the Dallas area with Duke Mannyweather. So, you know, he's right around the corner. I just think Slater's a guy who is going to really start to move up the charts as NFL evaluators, their opinions and scouts and coaches, as it starts to bubble to the top, you're going to find out that these guys love Slater, and I think he's going to keep moving up the draft board. And four is early for me for a guard. And I do think he's a potential guard, but I'm just telling you, I think he's also a great fit for Dallas if they want to look to trade back.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the reasons why he's such a fit is the versatility. Like you mentioned, he could play tackle, he could play guard. He told me that he's working out as a center.
Yeah, can snap.
With Duke right now. So he has legitimate position flex. And, you know, that term gets thrown around a lot for offensive linemen. Not all of them really have that versatility to just step in at another position. But I do think Slater does. He's just an easy player to like. And I mean, we've talked about it before. He's going to go on the stage there in Mobile. His arms are going to be 32 and a half, 32 and three quarters. And people are going to, you know, lose their stuff and, oh, he can't be a tackle. And this guy is so good. He's so much fun to watch. If the Cowboys traded back, I absolutely think he would be on the radar as a possibility there. It's just, yeah, if you're the Cowboys, trading back, if Sewell's gone, trading back is easily the next best option. And so it just comes down to, okay, is there a team, Denver or Chicago or San Francisco, New England, you know, Carolina? I don't know if they would trade with Washington, but can't rule anything out. Is there one of those teams that likes one of these quarterbacks enough that they would move up to go get him? I think that's certainly possible. And if you're the Cowboys, you're hoping your phone rings, because that's probably best case scenario. You've moved back. Say they move back to 9 or 10. You're still in range for one of these corners, Rashawn Slater, maybe Micah Parsons is available for you then. You feel better about drafting one of these pass rushers. I mean, the board really opens up for you. If you trade back, you get another draft pick, and you still are getting a quality player.
Yeah, and I think you got to watch the Miami Dolphins have a lot of draft picks, because they get Houston's first rounder and second rounder, and the Texans just lost Bradley Roby and Will Fuller to a PED suspension for the rest of the year. So if those losses start to mount, you know, Houston looks like it's kind of riding the ship, but if it turns on them and that 11th pick turns into, you know, 9 or 8, then all of a sudden they might look to move up for a Ja'Marr Chase to pair with their guy and
Tua, yeah.
and Tua. So that's something to consider. Patrick Surtain, you have at number 5 with the Chargers. And, you know,
it's the same conversation. Yeah, it's the same conversation with the Cowboys.
Exactly.
Like
same one.
Yeah, they'd love Penei Sewell to be there, I think, but he's not. And so, okay, what's the next best option? I would love for them to go Ja'Marr Chase here. You know, I'd love for them to add Chase to Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Guyton the way he's been playing. Just, you know, give Herbert all the weapons. But I have a hard time seeing them do that. But, you know, in this mock, I went Surtain, who he's not going to run really well. He's probably going to run four fives, but he can press. He gets physical. He finds the football. So he's an easy player to like. Maybe not as easy player to fall in love with, but he's an easy player to like.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that, and it's something they have to address their back end. I mean, they just are not good enough defensively right now. You know, I think another sneaky pick could be looking at Michael Parsons to stick there with Kenneth Martin and say, look, we're going to have the fastest linebacking core in football.
That'd
You'll
be
never
fun.
Outflank us. And we are just going to basically turn into a bunch of speed demons with our front seven. Your sixth pick in Carolina, I love it. It's Justin Fields to Ohio State, from Ohio State to Carolina. How much do you love – did you – when you thought about this, did you try to pair – was he an easy pick there, or did you have to think about him and Trey Lance when you were, and maybe even a Mac Jones, which, you know, it's not this early in a draft, I don't think, but we'll see. But with Joe Brady, because Joe Brady, I just wonder what you thought about Trey Lance with a guy like Joe Brady, if that ever crossed your mind at six, or Justin Fields was an easy, it would be the easy pick for me, but Lance, who has, you know, reads a full field, and I think they operate, North Dakota State operates with a little bit more on the quarterback's shoulders. I thought that would be interesting with Joe Brady, the offense coordinator from Carolina, and then Trey Lance. I mean, he brought along Joe Burrow as a quarterback and helped him get a lot better.
I'll be completely honest with you. I did not consider Joe Brady at all, just because I think if you're the Panthers, can you really trust that Joe Brady's going to be there that much longer? You know, I think if you are drafting a quarterback, obviously, you have to feel comfortable with him. But I think it's more about Matt Rhule, because, you know Matt Rhule's going to be there. Brady, who I think he just keeps ascending, you know, and how much longer, maybe even this offseason, he'll be in the mix for some of these openings around the league. So it really does make it difficult and a little tricky, because I think your point is valid. When you have Brady in the mix, then that kind of makes things interesting, because Trey Lance and some of these other quarterbacks are appealing. But my thought process was more, okay, Matt Rhule, the type of guy, the type of competitor that he wants. I do think Trey Lance is, you know, that his teammates, his coaches, they call him the hardest worker on the team. I mean, there's a lot of things Matt Rhule will like in there, but I also think there's a lot of things that Rhule's going to love about Fields.
No doubt. Fields, and he's a good leader too.
Absolutely. And I mentioned this before, but loved how when the Big Ten canceled their season, Justin Fields never once even considered opting out. I mean, he started a petition. He wanted to play. He was practicing every day. Ryan Day talks about him just glowingly with the way he works, the confidence that he plays with. I do think that will appeal to Matt Rhule quite a bit. And that's ultimately why I went that direction, just beside the fact that Fields is a good quarterback. Now, Fields is he's a difficult prospect because – the last time we saw him on the field was against Indiana, where he did struggle. Indiana mixed up their looks from man and zone, and just the different protections. The defense did a great job confusing Fields. And it's important for Fields to get back on the field to show, okay, I'm going to bounce back and be really strong from that. And we didn't get a chance to see him last weekend because of COVID. We don't know as of this taping if they'll play this weekend against Michigan State. And then, you know, you got Michigan after that, potential Big Ten championship game, and then potential playoffs. But there's just a lot of unknown with Ohio State right now. And it's important for Fields to get back on the field so we can kind of see him bounce back from. And it wasn't a terrible performance against Indiana. He had three touchdowns. He had over 300 yards passing. But those three picks, some of the mistakes that he made, very uncharacteristic. And it's just important for him to get back on the field and kind of right the ship a little bit.
No question. And, you know what? It's also good to see how guys handle adversity, in-game right. adversity from game to game, whatever the case may be. So I think that's important. I just think it's pretty obvious right now, and I haven't delved deep into the tape, but Fields definitely doesn't feel like he would get past pick number 6 when you consider the potential trade-ups that could mm-hmm. happen for quarterbacks. Now, at 7, I just finished writing up Ja'Marr Chase, and you know, it's funny because his route running is nonchalant. He's not great off the press in terms of his suddenness and all that stuff. And then when you watch him just get down the field, his acceleration is elite. Mm-hmm. And his ability to just purely accelerate and open a passing window. And then his ball skills. Once the ball is in the air, it is, I mean, he is it's just over. A ballerina in air. He can track and come back to the ball. His high point is excellent. His vertical leap is sensational. And I think, you know, ultimately for me, I love the pick here. It's a big, big need for the Philadelphia Eagles, Ja'Marr Chase at LSU. But route running is something I learned this the hard way with Tyreek Hill. Now, Tyreek had personal issues too, which I knocked him down for. But I was worried about Tyreek Hill's route running. I mean, oh my gosh, how stupid is that? The bottom line is you can't teach ball skills. You can't teach speed. I don't think you can teach ball skills. I mean, you can improve certain things, but the instincts to be a ball winner and playmaker, those you're born with. Playmaker and ball winner. You're born yeah. with it. That's a mindset and a physical athletic ability to have that speed. The ability to run routes, well, I mean, that can be worked on. That can mm-hmm. be coached. So don't get too caught up in, you know, route running stuff. People made the mistake with DK Metcalf. I made the mistake with Tyreek Hill. Don't get caught up in route running stuff. That's what coaches are for.
Perfectly said. I'm going to read to you the last three lines of my report on Ja'Marr Chase because I think it's basically exactly what you just said. Chase is extremely talented after the catch with the ball in the air, exemplifying the my ball attitude to consistently win the catch point. He plays like a smaller Larry Fitzgerald, appears very natural with his route movements, but he needs to do a better job making every route look the same off the line of scrimmage. Overall, Chase creates separation with his gear-changing acceleration, and he is an elite finisher with his physical ball skills displaying equal parts, competitive toughness, and playmaking skills to be a number one NFL receiver. So, I mean, we see him exactly the same. And it's just, he, like I said before, him and Sewell are the two guys, to me, that I've really looked into so far. I mean, I've looked at almost all these guys, the top guys. They're the two that stand out as being legitimate top 5, top 10 picks of the non-quarterbacks. And if the Eagles, which it's crazy how the Eagles keep going back between picks 19 and 7 or 6, you know, just because of the NFC East and how right. bizarre it is right now. But if they end up picking top 10, they're going to be in a situation where they need to get better on both sides of the ball. I don't think they're going to take a linebacker just because that's not what they do. Now, maybe they finally figure out, hey, we need to get more talent there, and they'll take a first-round linebacker, but I'm not betting on it. So on offense, you know, I kind of struggled with this pick a little bit because Ja'Marr Chase, that made a lot of sense, but who are the other possibilities? I mean, Kyle Pitts? I mean, maybe if Zach Ertz moves on next year, could they try to work a Pitts in that situation where he's a tight end half the time, slot receiver half the time? I don't think you can completely rule that out. Maybe you go offensive line here possibly, but Ja'Marr Chase just, to me, made too much sense.
Yeah, he makes a ton of sense for what they need, and somebody's going to have to try to rescue Carson Wentz. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a wide receiver, if it's going to be probably getting the offensive line fixed, or if they're going to have to start to look in a different direction, because that's just really not good there right now, quarterback. And I can't believe what I'm seeing, the regression, but that's happened. Now, Dwayne Haskins has never had a regression. It's just he's not going to be Ron Rivera's guy. I think that's obvious. And at Washington, you know, your next three picks, Washington, Detroit, and Atlanta, 8, 9, and 10, I think you'll make all the fans very happy with who read your mock, because they're exactly what they need. Trey Lance, young quarterback at Washington. The Lions, you have Micah Parsons, and they need a playmaking linebacker. And in 10, Atlanta Falcons, edge rusher, and Gregory Rousseau. We know that Tack McKinley was a huge disaster over there. They just have been looking. They've drafted edge rush. They've drafted it, and they haven't gotten it consistently. So I like what you did at 8, 9, and 10. I want to ask you specifically, Trey Lance, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about Trey Lance. I want to skip Washington for 1 second and go to Micah Parsons. When I watch Micah Parsons, I saw a guy whose instincts I thought sometime could be a little hit or miss, but I don't think I've ever seen anyone as fast sideline to sideline at the linebacker position
at that size,
in my years
of
studying this position. I don't, and his body type and build reminded me of an even bigger Saquon Barkley. He's got the same kind of legs, and he's a former running back, so I guess it makes sense they like him a certain build. But I mean, it's really like watching a running back's foot agility and pure speed at linebacker.
Yeah, and I think that is fair. He's a guy that, especially in coverage, you can tell he's just not completely comfortable there yet with his spacing, the anticipation. Now, the athleticism's there. I think you see a guy who he plays aware. He's not ahead of the play. He's not a step ahead. He's more reactive than proactive. And that's, I think, to be expected with a guy that never played linebacker in his life until he got to Penn State. And he only had 2 years of it. So I think that's fair. But size, speed, strength, man, this guy is as good as you could find at the linebacker position. One of the best pure talents in this class. It's just a matter of, okay, how much better can he get in terms of the read, react, and the instincts? And then, you know, where do you take an off-ball linebacker? Luke Kuechly going top 10 made sense. But, you know, I think there's even some debate with, you know, like a couple years ago, who'd the Bucks take number 5? Devin White.
Oh, Devin White, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was that too early for a guy like that? I mean, it's debatable. So with Micah Parsons, I think it'll be a similar conversation. Could he go 5 overall? Yeah, I think he'll be in that conversation. He's one of the best talents in this class, but he's a little tougher to figure out, finding that perfect home for him. Real quick, I want to backtrack to Washington.
Okay, go ahead.
Not Trey Lance, but let's say Trey Lance goes 6 to Carolina. Justin Fields is there for Washington. Do you think they would hesitate at drafting another Ohio State quarterback just 2 years after they drafted Haskins? I know there's a lot of new faces in that building. Some new decision makers, new head coach, but obviously the same owner. Do you think that they would balk at potentially adding another Ohio State guy, or do you think they would focus on the individual and kind of look past the decal on the helmet?
Well, I think they would focus on the individual, but to act like a guy who came from the same system, making a lot of the same throws, to act like there wouldn't be some subconscious things that could pop into their heads about those two quarterbacks, I think that would be silly. I mean, clearly the uniform, the offensive scheme, the stats were very, very similar for their freshman seasons. And the big difference is Dwayne Haskins never had a second year. You do have a second year for Justin Fields. So he has improved in areas of his game this year, and he is going to be a little more worldly in terms of coming into the league and his experiences. I think ultimately you have to judge the person. You have to judge the football character, the poise, the things that you prioritize at the quarterback position. You have to just look at them individually. But could they have people in the building who just are swayed because of the potential similarities? Oh, I mean, it's possible. Oh, it's absolutely possible. And if that were the case, somebody else, if Justin Fields were to make it to 8, you would have to think there would be somebody who has some eagerness to trade up. Maybe the Chicago Bears, wherever they end up, would have the... So it could still be a trade-back scenario, but I don't think that Fields will be hurt by Haskins' current level of production and success in the NFL. Whether you blame it on him, whether you blame it on Ron Rivera, no matter what you say, Washington may look at Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields some type of way because they came from the same offense. But I think they will look at them as individual talents when it's all said and done.
And I hope they do, because yeah, they are different types of quarterback. They have different personalities, maturity levels, things like that. So, but it is interesting to talk about because that we could find ourselves in a scenario like that where we have to have that conversation here once the draft order becomes a little more official. But it will be interesting when, you know, the Bears, they're right now at 5-6, I think, but they're trending towards a top 10 pick with the way that they're playing. I have them taking Rashawn Slater in this mock. You know, he's obviously their Northwestern programs right there. So a player that should be familiar with. I think he upgrades that offensive line immediately. I want to talk about the guy at number 15 because I struggled a little bit with where to put Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is one of the best talents in this class. Just plain and simple. He is a matchup nightmare one-on-one with his athleticism, the size, the length. He's a cheat code. But trying to find the best spot for him in this mock was a little difficult. Like, I considered him at number 5 to the Chargers. When you think about Hunter Henry playing on the franchise tag, he might be gone next year. And maybe the way we've seen the Chargers use like a Donald Parham, you know, Kyle Pitts would be an obvious upgrade over in a situation like that. You know, Carolina, you can't rule out if they don't go quarterback. Philadelphia, I mentioned, because Zach Ertz could be on his way out. Pitts could be, there's a lot of where you could see it fitting. But it's another thing to say, you know, this organization's going to commit to a pass-catching tight end this early, because really we just don't see it. I mean, going back the last 20 years, we had, okay, Vernon Davis went, what, 5 overall. Eric Ebron went 10 overall. But that's pretty much it. I mean, TJ Hawkinson went top 10, but he was such a dominant run blocker.
He's a why.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a true why. That's the difference.
So the primary pass catching tight ends, we just don't see them very often in the top 10 picks. So it was a little tough to figure out where he could potentially go. I have him falling to number 15 and the New England Patriots. Do you think that's fair what I'm saying? Like, just it's kind of tough to find a landing spot for a guy it's so talented, but it's tough to find an organization that's really going to commit to a pass catching tight end that early.
I think pass catching tight ends are the ultimate wild card in every draft because people, and here's why, I think too many teams make the mistake of looking at them as a pass catching tight end and like, all right, well, how does he fit? How many reps is he going to be on the field? And it's not, that's not really a mistake. I certainly understand it. But I think it's difficult to slot because when you say, okay, this guy's a tight end, now I'm going to work off the team's needs. And every time I get to a new team, I'm going to see if tight end is a need. Nope. Is tight end mm-hmm. a need? Nope. And before you know it, you're at the back end of your draft like, oh my gosh, I've had this guy fall. I'm just going to tell you now, Kyle Pitts should be looked at as a receiver. I understand he's a move tight end and he's a pass catching tight end, but you have to grade him as a receiver. And you have to ask yourself, is he better than Ja'Marr Chase? Is he better than Jaylen Waddle? Okay, no, if those are your two answers. Is he better than the next guy on the board? And if your answer is yes, then slot him where you need offensive weapons. That's how I look at it. And because one thing that we've seen is pass catching tight ends, just like I'll give you an example in fantasy football, right? The tight ends. Well, you've got every year, you've got like 5 different tight ends that are really dangerous in fantasy football in the NFL. And then after that, it's a huge drop off. The tier drops off. Well, those are huge advantages for the owners who draft those players because they've got a guy who is elite at that position from a production standpoint, and everyone else takes a big drop to tier 2 and tier 3. It's the same thing in actual football too. When you have a guy who makes that many plays, who has size matchup for one position like safety or a speed matchup for a linebacker, when Pitts is on the field, you're going to have to stay in a nickel the entire time. You don't have a chance, and that's going to help your running game to an extent with the personnel groupings because Pitts is such a dominant pass catcher, and I think he has a chance to give you the same type of production as, you know, as a wide receiver too. I think he's got that type of production talent where he could hit the double digit. I don't think it's crazy to think he could end up with 9 to 12 touchdowns by his second year in the league. So when I look at it, Dane, I'm looking at teams who, you know, I'll give you an example. What about Miami at 11? Now, I know they have Gesicki, who is not a great blocker either. So this would right. you have to kind of you have to work with me on this. But we're talking about Brian Flores and Chris Greer, who come from which team's background?
Yeah, in New England, yeah.
So the New England model has always been, they typically like to find a Y, it was Gronk, but they worked on this two tight end thing. Before they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, they had already been working. It was Garrett Mills and somebody else, like David Sloan or whoever. They've been working on this two tight end thing. Bill Belichick recognized the value in that. If you have Gesicki and Pitts out there in your four wide sets along with Preston and Devontae Parker, I mean, my gosh, I'm not sure how you're going to guard that kind of size in a slot. If you split one of them out like Pitts, you split him out. Well, who are you guarding him with when he's out at a Z spot? And you know what are you doing? Who's going to guard him? Are you putting a corner on him? Are you going to, you know, do you have to have how many corners do you have and how many safeties? And then does that make the box so light that they can sit there and block on the edges against safeties? Does Gesicki and Pitts get to block smaller guys and they run at you out of their two tight end set, because their two tight end set is a four wide receiver set.
Right.
So no, I'm just throwing some different ways that teams can think outside the box at using a guy like Pitts to create matchups.
I think it's a great point because and you can't rule it out. That, I think that's what you said is basically my point because, a team like Miami, because you look at Miami, they don't have a need at tight end. With Gesicki, they just signed Adam Shaheen to a little mini extension. The former Notre Dame tight end they like a lot. So on the surface, they don't have a need at tight end. But if you have a chance, if you are sitting there at, say, pick 11, and this talent is just falling into your laps, some of these teams will say, well, at this point, he's the best player available. We'll figure out a way to use him. We'll figure out a way where he can win matchups or he can help our offense. So it does make for an interesting dynamic. And back to your point about the top tight ends in the league and there being a drop-off, I mean, if you rank the top 10 tight ends in the NFL, how many were first-round picks? I'm not sure any of them. I mean, Kittle was a fifth rounder. Kelsey was a third. Mark Andrews was a third. Waller was later on the draft.
And Waller was a big wide receiver.
Right, exactly. So, Gronkowski was a second rounder. I mean, there's not a lot of guys you can point to that were first rounders that are currently top five, top seven, maybe even top 10 tight ends in the league. So it is a really interesting dynamic with Pitts because he's going to force teams to evaluate their situation, not only their depth chart at tight end, but thinking outside the box a little bit. And, okay, can we use him in the slot? How can we incorporate him in this offense where he's going to help us put stress on the defense? So it really is an interesting prospect and an interesting look and examination of where he could possibly fit.
Yeah, and it just wouldn't shock me if he didn't get past Chicago at currently sitting at 14. I mean, they need playmakers in the worst way. The Detroit Lions could look at saying, all right, you know what we're going to do? We got a good running back of the future in DeAndre Swift. We got a wide tight end in Hockenson who's come on a little bit. Let's go throw that playmaking tight end, that big slot out there in Pitts, and let's give some teams some different looks with our two tight end sets. And you know, that's a way that they could look at it too. So, and remember, Detroit, new general manager, Atlanta, new general manager. We'll see what direction those teams go in. Will Ryan Pace be safe in Chicago if things keep going sideways? I think that's, you know, worth the conversation right now. You've got cornerback J.C. Horn to San Francisco. That's definitely a need. But why don't you talk about your Raiders pick at number 17? Because this is a team that has slowly been – well, not even slowly. They've been building on the defensive side of the ball, and this pick is just another in a line of selections that are being made to really turn the Raiders' defense into the next big thing, I think. And this would be one of those selections.
Yeah, I went with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, the linebacker from Notre Dame, who's, you know, a little bit in that Isaiah Simmons category where he's a big safety, a little bit of an undersized linebacker, that hybrid type with the athleticism to do everything you want. He can blitz, he can string out runs, he can drop in coverage. And I mean, legit drop in coverage, not just cover backs and tight ends. He could line up in the slot and not hurt you out there. So there's a lot to like about Owusu-Koramoah and just his versatility, the athleticism. And you're right. When you look at the Raiders, they've invested a lot of picks, especially, you know, once Mike Mayock came in, a guy like Cleveland Farrell, high in the draft, you know, Jonathan Abram at safety, you know, last year with Damon Arnett, and not all those picks have worked out, but you know, they still need some more speed on that side of the ball. And I think adding a guy like Owusu-Koramoah, who's got the versatility, he's got the athleticism, that would be, I think, what they're looking for, a playmaker on that side of the ball. And I wanted to talk to you about the next guy that had on
I can't believe you're on this guy. The offensive line community is all over this guy, and
he's
I
so
should have
good.
Known it because you're a guy who I always trust when it comes to O-line evaluations because you do the work, you put the time in, and this was a second-round player last year, and you're talking about Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. Now, you've got him listed at guard. I think he's a guard too, but what has made him a really interesting study is that this big, broad guard with good feet and athleticism has been moved out of need. They've moved him out to left tackle, and I'm telling you what.
He's playing really well.
His tackle tape has been really, really good up to this point.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, it's been impressive. I mean, they had to replace Austin Jackson, who was a first-round pick last year, and so they kick him outside, and he looks natural. I mean, you see the balance. You see his ability to stay centered on his blocks. I've been so impressed with him, and I think he's still a guard prospect, but knowing that he can do that, it just ups his value, the versatility that he brings. And you look at a team like the Ravens, which is where I have Vera Tucker slotted to, a team that needs help on the interior of their offensive line. But they could also use tackle depth. Right now, Ronnie Stanley's hurt. Orlando Brown, he's going to have a contract coming up here soon. Having a guy like Vera Tucker who can help you out at guard, help you out on the interior, but also kick out the tackle if you really needed him to, that is a value to have on that offensive line. So, yeah, Vera Tucker, he's what, I think the third offensive lineman. Yeah, Sewell, Slater, and then Vera Tucker, the three offensive linemen in this draft to go top 20. He's just a really quality player that I don't think he's going to have to wait very long to hear his name called.
All right, I'm going to move this along a little bit because we're going to go through all your mock drafts every time they're out. Devontae Smith, we're going to talk a lot about. You got him to the Giants. Azeez Ojulari from the edge from Georgia to the Arizona Cardinals. Tampa Bay with a fast riser and Joseph Asai off the edge. He's really come on strong. But tell me a little bit about Zaven Collins. I don't know him as well. The linebacker from Tulsa. Let's talk a little bit about Miami's second pick in the first round and Zaven Collins out of Tulsa.
If Zach Wilson, the quarterback at BYU, is the biggest riser on the offensive side of the ball this year, I think Zaven Collins is the biggest riser on the defensive side. I mean, someone tipped me off to him back probably early October as a guy that, okay, take a look at this guy. Scouts are starting to buzz about him. He's 6'3", 260. I mean, he has old school linebacker build, but he moves like a new age linebacker. He's fluid. He's fast. He can cover. Not only are the traits there, but the production has been outstanding. And not just the production. He's not just piling up tackle numbers, even though he does lead Tulsa with 48 tackles. He's making impact plays. He's got four interceptions. A couple of those are pick sixes. He's just making big plays, impact plays, where right time, right place kind of guy, not by accident. He'd be a perfect fit with what Brian Flores is doing in Miami. I don't know that he's necessarily a top need, but he just would be a perfect fit as a guy that can rush. He can play off the ball. He can just do a little bit of everything. Would love to see that fit. And Zaven Collins, you know, when I started mapping out this mock draft a couple weeks ago, just kind of, you know, putting thought into it and thinking about where I was going to do it, I'm like, you know what, Zaven Collins, he's a first round pick. And a couple weeks ago, that felt like I was maybe ahead of the curve. Now it seems like, I mean, he's going to go first round because the traits are there, the production is there. He's an ascending player who is just a really talented guy.
Now, listen, I'm not going to give you guys all these picks because you guys have to go to The Athletic and go check out Dane's article. You don't just get a freebie right here with every pick. You got to go out there and subscribe and actually get Dane's work, okay? I will say.
Can we talk about one more guy, though?
Let me guess. Let me guess who. Is he in the top 28?
Top 30.
Okay, then you're going to talk about Landon Dickerson, I bet.
Yeah, who you and I traded
Sorry you got him so low. He's going way higher than this. He's an animal.
You think?
Landon Dickerson is an animal.
Yeah, he is. Honestly, the only thing that's really could hurt him is the durability. You know, first three years at Florida State, he couldn't finish the season. He played like four games in a season the first 3 years. But he's played every game for Alabama the last 2 years. Talking about the offensive line flexibility, guard center, Landon Dickerson has legit center guard flexibility. I think he is a better guard, but he's been playing center at a high level for Alabama, so you know he can do it. He's just, when you really break him down, you just kind of run out of reasons why he shouldn't be a first-round pick. You're like, okay, he's smart, he's tough, he's competitive, he's got an edge to him, he's got enough quickness. He's not explosive per se, but he's quick, he can get the job done. You just run out of reasons why he cannot be or he shouldn't be a first-round pick. So I don't know that any other mock out there has Landon Dickerson in their first round, but I bet you mine will not be the last that has that has him in there.
My first mock will have him in the first round. I mean, it's hard to find anyone that's he's wide, he's athletic, he's got position flexibility, his technique is good, he's strong. I mean, there's a lot to like about him. Yeah, I do need to check on some of the physical stuff and check on that. But yeah, Landon Dickerson, 100% should be in the first round. And I would have Etienne in there as well. You've got him at 32 to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think. And there's another quarterback in the first round. That's all I'm going to say. You guys have to go and check and see who it is if you're a fan of a quarterback-heavy team. But good first effort here. I like what you got. There's a couple players that I don't know that I'm going to have them in the first, a tackle or two. But tackles get pushed up. You've got a good rush on quarterbacks, and I think people are really going to like this first effort because you plugged in a lot of holes that needed to be plugged for a lot of these teams, and that's usually what fans like out of that first mock.
Well, hopefully people will go on The Athletic, check it out, leave a comment in the comment section, hit me up on Twitter, let's talk about it, tell me what you agree with, what you don't agree with. But no, this is a great discussion. So Lance, as always, thank you. That'll do it for this week's Prospects to Pros. Lance is at Lance Zuerlein on Twitter. I'm at DP Brugler. Please subscribe, rate, comment. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you next week.